John Batchelor, this is the John Batchelor Show. Gordon Chang of Forbes.com and The Daily's with me. Gordon, I welcome Jonathan Kamen, who publishes for the New York Times. He's in Beijing, and his revelatory piece about not what we call ethnic music in China introduces us to the wonderful world of musicians setting themselves apart from the regime and apart from official music, and captivating an audience in much the same way that in the 1960s and 70s, our famous folk singers took over America.
What you have in Beijing, and my wife and I have gone to these clubs, is you have musicians and sometimes really very defiant lyrics, basically sticking their finger to the regime, and yet this goes on even in the heart of the Chinese capital.
Jonathan, welcome. And I want to start with the story of a man from Xiao Budian, who is a multi-instrumentalist, and he's the son of a cowherder. What kind of music does he play?
He plays folk music. It's a very eclectic sort of music. It draws influences from the town where he's from in southwestern China, but it also mingles with elements of rock and reggae and rap and, you know, all sorts of genres that you find in the West.
Now, the story of him taking the money for his high school degree and spending it on a one-way ticket to Beijing, that is too fabulous. Can we trust this, or did he get that out of a storybook, Jonathan?
It's hard to say. I trust it. I mean, it seems to be a fairly typical story here.
Gordon, it reminds me of Dylan Zimmerman, right? Getting on the bus and heading to Manhattan because that's where it was happening.
You know, there's something common about the human experience, whether we're talking about the United States or China. People just want to better their lot.
Jonathan, what is Hangai?
Hangai is a Mongolian band. They come from the grasslands in Inner Mongolia, not to be confused with Outer Mongolia, which is its own sovereign nation to the north. They came to Beijing many years ago, and they've made a name for themselves as basically a rock band that combines rock with influences from their native Inner Mongolia.
What's it sound like, Jonathan?
Oh, it's beautiful, beautiful music. You have traditional sounds like horsehead fiddle, which is an instrument. It sounds a little bit like a cello. It's very deep sound. Rhythms that they say sound like the galloping of horses. Beautiful songs.
And is it in conflict with the regime, or is it okay for them to play it, or do they feel constrained in any fashion?
See, it's not in, I wouldn't say it's in direct conflict with the regime. The regime has its own way of representing ethnic minorities, and the way that Hangai plays music, sort of, it takes a step outside of that official representation. But by no means are they providing a direct, provoking the regime, or threatening the regime in their lyrics.
Gordon?
Jonathan, some people say that the music in Beijing, in China, is now so innovative, so imaginative, that it's really the most dynamic music scene in the world. Is that right?
Some people say that, and I'd say to a certain degree it is. I mean, you do see a lot of music springing up here that you wouldn't be able to find elsewhere. I'd say particularly in ethnic music, because that's something that China has that the rest of the world doesn't. But, of course, there are still limits to the degree to which this music can be successful.
Now, this is me being very difficult. What is official Chinese music? Does it sound like Barry Manilow? What does it sound like?
It does not sound like Barry Manilow. You have a lot of MIDI keyboards. You have a lot of synths. You have a lot of lyrics about how supportive the communist government is of its minority people. Visually, it's very striking. You have a lot of very colorful outfits, a lot of big, bright smiles, a lot of dancing.
Oh, it's sort of like The Simpsons turned into Goody Goodies, that kind of thing. I see. I understand. I get it. Okay, Gordon, is this going on without the regime's permission? Do they know about this?
Well, they know about this, and I think part of this, really, the real charm in Jonathan's story is he talks about how these groups really try to skirt the limits, to do what's necessary to get an audience, but as he says, sometimes if they go too far, they will lose the stage. And this really is sort of like a metaphor for dissidents in China, for people who practice religion. It just cuts across society and is so symptomatic of what's going on in China today.
And, Jonathan, are they aware that they have potential outside of China, that this kind of music is always welcome in parts of the world that collect fresh sound?
They're actually more popular outside of China than domestically.
So they're aware that there's money out here. Is that what I'm trying to get?
Plenty of opportunities.
Yeah.
They're constantly touring Europe, and I think they played at Bonnaroo, a large music festival in the States, this summer.
And Gordon, this sounds like an exciting development. You know, anytime culture gets out in front of the politicians, the politicians will fail.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really interesting is that this highlights that China is really the most dynamic society on Earth today. Chinese people are really moving very, very, very fast, very forward.
And Gordon, they're the Han Chinese, right? That's the almost everybody, right?
That's the 92% that's suppressing Nuri Turkel's Uyghurs.
But there are these minorities I've never heard of. Yi minority of Southwest China. Are these well known? Would they be able to recognize, oh, well, he's a Yi?
I think it probably would be pretty hard, largely because there have been a lot of intermarriages and the Yi have assimilated to a certain extent into Chinese society.
But they're holding on to their cultural roots. This is sort of like, they say, the Scots with their fiddles.
Absolutely.
And Jonathan, in writing this article, is there a place we can send my audience? Are there websites? How do you know where this music is?
Well, you can just actually Google the names of the artists. Google Shanren, S-H-A-N-R-E-N, or Hangai, H-A-N-G-G-A-I. I mean, it's all in the article. And you'll be able to find plenty of material on them.
And it's downloadable. People can reproduce it. Is it on iTunes? Anything that sophisticated yet?
It's on iTunes, yep.
So what we're looking at, Gordon, is that I'm late to the story. I didn't know about this.
You know, you go to some of the clubs in New York and London, Amsterdam, there are Chinese musicians there, and they're at the forefront of change.
And what about the lyrics, Jonathan? Are there protest lyrics? Are there secret passages? Are there stanzas that they want to perform and can't?
No, I'd say there aren't, really. I mean, some of them are, you know, they do exist outside of government representation, so they might be considered a little bit edgy, not by Western standards, and none of them directly provoke the regime. Now, one other thing is that I'd say that Hangai, to a certain degree, and Shanren both, do have to some degree, the support of the Chinese government. The Chinese government sees them as cultural ambassadors, in a way.
Well, that's fair enough. Gordon, what about the fact that this music is going on without the regime's permission? Is there something, is it comparable to anything in this country? I'm just trying to get an analogy about what's going on here with the young people. They're clearly not paying attention, Gordon. They're saying one thing and doing another, which is how young people work.
Well, I think, though, the analogy is that, you know, in the United States, you can do what you want. In China, even sometimes the most uncontroversial positions and acts really do take on political significance because the regime sees everything as political
and therefore
necessary for its survival.
Jonathan, is there Uyghur music? Is there Tibetan music that's banned or not welcome? Because that's outside of the Chinese minorities.
Well, it's hard to say if it's banned or not, but I find that it's harder for Uyghur and Tibetan music to really catch on in Beijing to the same degree that this Mongolian music and this e-music has. Maybe because of more deep-rooted prejudices within Chinese society as a whole, or just circumstantially, you know, musicians haven't really been able to take that stage.
We're talking about a large number of people. Gordon, when you're dealing with a billion-plus, and 8% is a big number. 8% of China's population is 100 million people belong to state-designated ethnic minority groups. Gordon, should I trust that, this state-designated ethnic minority? I mean, did they draw up some list on the back of an envelope one time and some made it and some didn't?
Well, you know, basically that list is very funny because there should be probably 400 minorities, but a lot of them have been sort of put together as groups that never really did exist before, but they do exist for the Communist Party, and that's what gives them force and vitality today.
And Jonathan, in writing this piece up, Have you heard from these people that you've given them exposure in the West? Have they commented? Is everything okay with them?
I think they agree with the piece, yeah.
And not, in other words, there's been no pushback. Nobody's called them up and say, what are you doing in the New York Times as an ethnic minority?
I don't believe so. I mean, I've looked at some of their websites and some posts they've made on the Chinese version of Twitter. It's called Weibo. And they all seem fairly supportive of the piece, yeah.
Gordon, this is a door that opened that I didn't know about. I'm going to get a hold of this music, Gordon.
You know, John, I'll take you to Beijing and we'll go to D22.
I'll go to iTunes before I go to Beijing. I'd never leave the studio. You know that. Jonathan Kamen, writing for the New York Times, with his colleague Andrew Jacobs. Gordon Chang of Forbes.com and The Daily. He's trying to get me to travel. I'm John Batchelor.